The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Welcome back to the second program now for the new year. It's hard to believe 2022 is here. I have on the line with me today Ashley Balajan. Ashley owns her own law firm in the Central Florida area, and it is a unique one. We're going to get into all of the areas that make her firm unique as we talk this morning. Welcome, Ashley. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, it is really an unusual way to advertise a law firm, being that one of the first descriptors that I saw on your website is that you're a faith-based law firm. Now, there are a lot of people that would say, how in the world can an attorney and the words faith-based firm go hand in hand? Do you ever get that kind of response?
I have gotten in a few times. But how I approach it is, if anyone ever asks me, because I do get asked, because I know attorneys have a very, very bad rep. People normally are like, oh, attorneys are liars. Actually, no, most attorneys are actually very honest. I know people don't believe that because, you know, of media, movies and stuff like that. But the reality of it is, most attorneys are ethical and a lot of them are honest. If you're not, then that is a problem. How I separate myself from most attorneys is, the Florida bar ethics sets a pretty high standard of ethics, but God's ethics for attorneys are even higher than the Florida bar ethics.
Oh, that's good.
And that's what I always hold true to. I'm like, you know, the bar is high, but God is my boss and he's the one that's running the firm, not me. I'm just the instrument he's using. So I need to make sure we're doing things right and we're doing things for God.
Well, we're looking forward to getting into the depths of some of the things that you do on a day-to-day basis. But first of all, we'd like to get to know you a little bit. Where did you come from? Are you Floridian by birth, or did you move here? And how did you come to know the Lord?
Sure. So I'm originally from New Hampshire. So that's where I'm originally from. I'm from a town about 45 minutes from Boston. So I moved down to South Florida, me and my mom, because she wanted to start over. She wanted a new life, turn a new leaf over. So we had some family in South Florida. So we moved down to South Florida when I was 11. So we were in the West Palm Beach area. Then I was down there until I started college. So I did do college for 1 year down in South Florida, but then I transferred up here to University of South Florida to get my bachelor's degree. And then I went to law school here in Central Florida, and then I've just been here ever since. And that's why I call it my home. I really love it here. So how did I come to know the Lord? So I actually did grow up in a family that did go to church, and we did. God was a big part of our life. Now my mother's side of the family, we grew up Baptist. But on my father's side, they grew up Catholic, and my father's side, they did not ever go to church. I did come to know the Lord when I was young, probably around 7 or 8. I got baptized around that age as well. Mm-hmm. Didn't really do too much with my faith, and I actually walked away from my faith for probably at least 10 years. I walked away in my 20s. It was a life I did not, you know, looking back on it, I wish I never did. It was a life not worth living. It was a life all about me, myself, and I. It was horrible. But then, you know, I was in a couple of major car accidents where I was hit. One, I was hit by a semi truck on I-4 and they slammed me into the median. Another car had sideswiped me and I hit head front into a tree. So both of those car accidents, I was really, really lucky to be alive. And
really?
They told me, they're like, we don't even know how you're alive and like walking and don't have serious injuries. And
something about being hit by a semi truck on I-4 slamming into the median.
Yeah,
that sounds horrible.
Yeah, it was pretty horrible, but you know what? You know, I lived through it. And so those are both like in my, I was 18 and the other one, I think it was like 19 or 20. So they weren't too far away from each other, but I still didn't come back to God from that. Actually, my time coming back to God was I was actually driving back down to West Palm Beach to see my mom because at the time she was still living there. So I was driving to West Palm Beach and they had just made this brand new turn off of I-95. And they didn't have any signs at the time. So it was a very, very sharp turn and there was no warning sign that it was a very sharp turn and no barrier. So it was very high off the ground. And so I was going around the corner, probably around easily 60 miles an hour or more in this incredibly sharp turn. With no warning. And all of a sudden, because the turn was so sharp, I was not able to try to slow the car down. I knew in that moment that the car was going to fall off the side and I was going to die. So, yeah. And I, my mom, I was actually talking on the phone with my mom, something you should never do while you're driving, but
especially not while, especially not while you're making a sharp turn.
Yeah. So I was on the phone with my mom. She heard me say, oh, my gosh, I'm going to die. I don't remember saying it, but she remembers. And then I'll never forget it. I had both of my hands on the wheel because I dropped the phone because I was like, okay, I'm going to die. So I'm going to try to hold on to the wheel. And I felt a force grab the top of my wheel. I felt like I literally felt a force grab the top of my wheel and steer the car back onto the road so I didn't end up flipping off the road. I didn't flip off. And when that happened, I said to myself, oh, God, you got my attention. And I was like, that's a third time. And I was like, people don't get that many chances. So I was like, you got my attention. And then I changed my life after that. So.
Oh, that is such an amazing story. You know, my wife and I had a similar type of thing. Wasn't on a sharp turn, but it was on an icy bridge going over the Ohio River. And it was in the wintertime and it was real icy. And we felt ourselves sliding. And like we were, we were without control of that car, and it was a small car. I had not owned it too terribly long. I think it was highly underweight for what we were doing, and a strong wind. And back in that time, we were having horrible storms. And what we felt was, we felt like almost like a force pushed down on the car, and kept us suddenly very stable. So we went from being really slippery and feeling like we're sliding one way or the other, and then all of a sudden it's as if the Lord just put angels and they sat down on our car and we made it without any issue. And we had that same sense. You know, God's helping us. This is real intervention here, and the Lord is doing it, and that's exactly what happened to you.
That's amazing. I love that story. That's so awesome. You know, it's just God's power is just so much more than we could, you know, ever imagine and everything. And I mean, I will never forget that day. And I mean, it was crazy because at that time I never drove with two hands on the wheel. So I knew I wasn't imagining it. And, you know, it's crazy. And, you know, it makes me realize that, first of all, we're not going anywhere until it's our time to go. But, you know, if God has spared you more than once, obviously you're here for a reason, which is all of us. We're all here for a reason. So, you know, we should take that time and live our life for Him and do what, you know, do what He wants us to do, do our purpose for Him.
So when this happened, and you're already obviously an adult in college, perhaps even heading toward your career, did you have it immediately in mind that your future firm would look like it looks today?
No, I was still going to UCF. So I still was a little undecided what I was going to do for my graduate degree. When that happened, what happened to me at that moment was I believed that God did exist because I walked away. Now, I didn't start immediately going to church. But I never existed. I never doubted that God existed again. Mm-hmm. What happened with my firm, how I came into what I was doing was I was studying for the bar exam. So I was studying for the bar exam a few years ago. And God just kept, like, I kept seeing a lot of signs and like physical and spiritual signs about human trafficking. And I knew nothing about human trafficking. And I was just, and I kept praying about it. And I was like, God, I was like, because I wasn't going to do family law ever. I was not, and I even said it in law school multiple times. I'm never, ever doing family law ever. But as you know, as a believer, we don't tell God what we're not going to do.
How true is that? Yes.
So I prayed about it for some months and I was like, God, is this what you want me to do? I was like, I'm not interested in this. This is heavy. I'm like, I'm not interested in doing this. And I prayed about it. And I finally was like, listen, God, I was like, I love you, but you need to be really upfront with me. And if this is what you want me to do, I'll do it. But you need to give me a very direct sign, because I was like, because I need to make sure this is coming from you and not the enemy messing with me, because I'm starting for the bar exam and I'm already starting to lose it psychologically and mentally anyway. So that night when I prayed that to God, and this is the only time this has ever happened to me ever in my entire life, it has never happened again. I had a dream that night. And what had happened was I was in an underdeveloped country. I don't know where. I couldn't see the girl's face. I couldn't tell if she was like in her late teens or early 20s. Her face was kind of blurry. And she came up to me and she hugged me. And I knew she was thanking me for whatever I did to help her. And it was, the dream was that night when I asked God for a clear sign. And I've never had a dream like that ever again, you know, asking God for a sign. I've never had that happen again. That was the only time it ever happened. So that's when I was like, okay, God, I was like, all right, I'm going to pursue human trafficking. So what ended up happening was, so when I passed the bar exam, the first year I started practicing, I was trying to get a job with a state prosecutor, a public defender, a nonprofit, a DCF, anything I could do that could get me a job to help human trafficking survivors. I was like, okay, God. I was like, it's obviously going to come to me. Yeah, it's going to come. Yeah. No, I can't tell you how many interviews I had. Everyone was like, yeah, we love you. Could not get a job. I was like, what? I was like, what the monkey? I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, God, you told me to do this. And then I tried to volunteer with a bunch of human trafficking organizations. And no one was getting back to me. Tried to do the federal level, state level, local nonprofit. Like, no one was, it was awful. I was like, okay, this is terrible. And then the virus hit. And I had a job as an attorney doing like fill-in work for other attorneys, making no money. I wasn't making enough to live on. I was actually still serving for full time my first year of practicing as being an attorney full time, because I wasn't making enough as an attorney to live, because it was like a fill-in job when other attorneys couldn't be in court.
Mm-hmm.
So when COVID hit, both of those jobs were gone overnight, both of them overnight. And I started praying and I was like, God, I was like, what do you want me to do? I'm trying to do what you want me to do. And he was like, I want you to open your firm in time. And like, this is right when COVID happened, the first time it happened. And I was like, I don't know if you know what's going on, God, but there's kind of a virus. So yeah. I was like, I don't know. So I prayed about it. And I was like, I really don't want to do that. He's like, you need to open your firm and you need to do it now. And
so
I was
this
like,
is,
I really, what's up?
This is March 2020 then when this happened,
yeah,
right?
It was March 2020. Mm-hmm. And then I prayed about what area of law he wanted me to do. And he was like, family law. And I was like, no. I was like, that's not what I want to do. And he was like, you need to do family law. And I was like, oh. And then, you know, sometimes you might pray more than a couple times. You want to make sure it's really coming from God and you're just not hearing it yourself. So you want to make sure it's, you know, God didn't change his mind or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I prayed about it more than a couple times. And he was like, I want you to do family law. And I was like, why? And he was like, human trafficking, because human trafficking and family law is intersected a lot. People don't usually think it is, but it intersects a lot. And I was like, okay. And that's what I've done. And yeah. And that's when I opened my firm last year. It was May of 2020. So and an amazing blessing since.
You know, to open up a law firm right in the time of the pandemic, it really does not seem like that would be the wisest thing to do. But, you know, God's timetable is the most important thing. And, you know, maybe not so much a situation of even being wise, but just being possible to think about the fact that you could open up a brand new business, get it up and running in a time when we were all being affected. Most of us were being sent home. I did to my home studio during that time because of the law stating what we did. And that lasted much more than the 2 weeks to flatten the curve that we all heard about up front.
Yeah.
It lasted a lot longer than that. And now we're in this next surge of this variant, and we're all seeing again what is happening around us. The world is trying to almost kind of conform us and shape us and tell us where we can, and kind of like what happened to you in the beginning, where you were thinking, well, I can never do that, I could never do that. Those are the voices that are speaking out to a lot of people. But I'm so grateful that you are one that's obviously been demonstrated to hear the voice of the Lord as He's leading you in the unique ways that He's led you, both through this dream and through this experience driving on the road. You're a person that believes the Lord, and when you get that sense from Him, you take it and go.
You know, it's been, it really has been an amazing journey. And for something I thought I never wanted to do, I can truly see now that I was created to do this, because how I always approach it is I would want someone to care about me and be there for me while I'm going through the process that, that my client is going through. You know, my parents were divorced when I was one. So mm-hmm. I know what it's like to be that child, and I know what it does to a child psychologically, emotionally, mentally. I know what it's like to have one parent say horrible, horrible things about the other parent. And I know what it's like to have one parent never say anything bad. So you believe the parent who's saying all these horrible things, because obviously the other parent's not saying anything. So clearly the parent saying all these horrible things, it must be true. And it took me until I was a teenager to realize, okay, those things obviously are not true. And I ended up standing up for the parent who wasn't saying anything bad once I became a teenager. But mm-hmm. I truly do understand what some of it is, what some of my clients are going through. I do understand how the kids are, what they're going through, because it's very difficult. And, you know, and I always tell my clients, please do not speak ill of the other parent in front of your child or to your child. You have no idea what it does to them, and it will affect them in a very bad way. And when they get older, they're going to see what's going on, and you might not have a relationship with them. My kids are so perceptive, and they so know what's going on. They are very intelligent. Even if they don't say it, they are very aware of what is going on. Don't talk bad about the other parent to your children, and don't keep the other parent from your child or children unless they are truly a threat, unless they are truly very unsafe. Don't do that. It mm-hmm. will have effects for a lifetime. So
they really do, and that's really great advice. And just knowing the sheer numbers of people who have gone through exactly what you're talking about, a divorce and their mom and dad at different varying ages. And it's sad to think that even among believers, among the church, those in the church, much higher than it should be. Some people say that there's no difference at all in the divorce rate among believers. And I know in some of the churches that I've been a part of in the past, that might well be the case. But at any rate, it's a high percentage. And so I know a lot of people are resonating with what you're talking about, the impact on a child's life. It really is hard to calculate. And it's really difficult to imagine what things are going to be like in the next year or two as someone is developing like a child, and then all of a sudden the people that are over them, caring for them, nurturing them, and the people that they love the most, they see in this horrible split. So there's a great need for people in family law who have the kind of convictions that I know God's brought about in you. And we're going to be talking more with Ashley in a moment. This is Ashley Balajan that's on the phone with me. She has a law firm in Central Florida that is faith-based. We'll find out more about that in a moment. You're in tune to Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. On the phone today with Ashley Balajan. Ashley has her own law firm, and it is it's spelled Baillargeon. And we were talking in the break about the French background of that that name, but pronounced here Balajan. And you can do a website search and find out about this website. She has a very nice and very informative web page for you to look at. And you know what you're dealing with today, it's really sad, Ashley, to realize that this is true. And even among believers, as we were talking about, very few people are untouched ever in their life without the need of getting some sort of legal counsel at one point or another. Sometimes it's over what happened to you with automobile accidents. You've had a couple of them. And I know my daughters were involved in a couple of pretty strong rear-ending accidents when we were in Gainesville. And boy, they brought some physical problems that my girls still deal with. So this kind of a thing, whether we are believers or not, there's a great need to have people who represent us legally and to have one, like yourself, with a law firm that is based in your faith. That's got to be one giant leg up for people who are looking for someone to represent them.
Thanks. Whenever someone reaches out to me, I know I was telling you before, whenever someone reaches out to me for a possible divorce or any kind of situation, sometimes it's not just divorce. Sometimes they just are coming from a really unsafe situation, such as domestic violence, because I do injunctions as well. So one thing I will always ask, this if they're reaching out for a divorce, though, is if they've had counseling, if they're open to counseling, and if they're they would be willing to speak with a counselor, either for them, their children, or with their spouse. And I do that because I can't say I'm a believer or, you know, in a Christian and say I have a faith-based law firm and just say, okay, let me take your money. Because a lot of, you know, I won't say a lot of times, let me back up. Sometimes people, when they reach out, they don't even want a divorce. They're just at a place in their marriage where they think divorce might be the only option or the best option. I've had people reach out to me and I ask them, you know, is this really what you want? And I knew it wasn't, because I knew God was telling me to ask that. And they're like, no, but I don't know what to do. So, but they do want to know what their legal options are, just in case, which I will tell them. But I'll say, okay, I was like, well, here, when we get off the phone, let me give you some names of some really great counselors that I work with. And all the counselors I work with, I have vetted them. They're all really experienced. Mm-hmm. I work with many different types of counselors, depending on what the need is, but they're all believers. So, and that is very, very important to me.
Now, you know, the word counselor, we see this in movies and TV shows. It's sometimes attributed to those in a courtroom when they're being referred to by the judge or by other people. As a counselor. So it's ironic, yeah. Isn't it? As believers, we have this one, this one image as to what the counselor is. But the truth is, that's also one of the names for the Lord. And believers who are helping other people, let's just say helping other people in their lives, not just necessarily legally speaking, but there's an aspect of the fact that we represent the greatest counselor of all time, and that's God, Jesus himself, who is a mighty counselor, wonderful counselor, Prince of Peace, and he's the one that can help in this. And you deal with people at points, sadly, this is part of what an attorney must do. You deal with people at some of their maybe most frantic or most injured or perhaps most upset states of their life, and that's when you're being called on to step in. So that is a justifiable term, is it not, for you?
Well said. Yes. It is very, you know, I will be very honest. It is very difficult some days, not every day, but some days can be very, very difficult because of the hearings that you have, because, you know, these are people's lives on the line. Like, it is very serious.
Mm-hmm.
And you care about them and you want a good outcome for them. Now, because in family law, there really is very rarely a winner. Like, no one really wins in family law. You know, you're just trying to make the situation better, you know, when you have an attorney with you and, you know, trying to guide you through the process, try to make a better outcome than if you were to do it yourself, and, you know, and try to take some of that stress off and everything. And it's just, you know, it is really sad. Some days are very difficult, but I know this is what I'm called to do. And whenever anyone asks me, I don't know how you do this, especially by other attorneys, because family law, most attorneys you speak to, if they don't practice family law, most attorneys are going to say, I would never practice family law, because it is very, very emotionally charged. You're right. You are getting people at probably the worst time in their life, unless they suffer death by, you know, someone they care about, or if they're going through cancer. So what I always tell people is, listen, you know, I'm here with you. We're going to do this one step at a time. We're going to do this one day at a time. It's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. We're going to go through this together. You know, you're not alone. And I always pray before every hearing I have. I pray for every client that I have. And I tell them, just so you know, I've prayed for a hearing. And most of them are very receptive to that. And if they're not, it's okay. I do not force what I believe on you, but I'm letting you know God is part of my firm and everything, because that's who my boss is. God is my boss. It's not me. It's God. So that's how I approach it.
And they have the option to stay with you if that's not something that they want to be a part of. You know, we're seeing time. One aspect about that, we're seeing a trend happening around us in the country where people who believe, people who have faith, and are using that in their day-to-day lives, and maybe like you, that's even part of your professional markup on a website, we're being singled out for our faith, canceled in this culture, if you will. And this is hard to believe sometimes, that this is America. But do you ever feel pushback from, let's say, other peer attorneys or judges or whatever? Do you ever feel a pushback because of your outrightness of your faith?
I haven't had it happened yet. I have had an attorney right when I was starting my firm. They were of a different religion. I won't say what it is because I don't want to offend anyone, but they were of a different religion. And they said, hey, I don't know why you would put faith based on your website. I know that's probably going to offend people. And I knew that for a fact that was Satan speaking through that person. I knew that for a fact, and it was to have me not represent God. So what I did, and I responded to them. I responded to them as kindly as I could. And I said, listen, I don't have a problem if you don't believe in God. But if you have a problem with me believing in God, then we have a problem and I don't need you as a client. Because I'm not going to ask you as a client, what is your faith? Like, what's your faith? Do you have any faith? There is no requirement for you to even have a relationship with God. But if me believing in God is offensive for you, then I'm sorry, then I'm not the attorney for you. I'm happy to recommend other attorneys. That's fine. But I'm not going to get offended, and I'm not going to not stand up for God. I know what it's like to be in a life that you're afraid to say you're a believer or you're ashamed, you know? And it says in the Bible that if we're ashamed to, you know, say we believe in God, then he's going to be ashamed of us. Mm-hmm. And I hold on to that because I don't want to die. And, you know, I see God and God was like, what did you do, Ashley? What were you doing down there? I don't want to live a life like that because our life here is so, so limited and it's over in the blink of an eye. But we're with God if you are a believer and if you accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior, we're with him forever. And, you know, how we act down here absolutely will affect our life up there, you know? So
this is a very strong, it's a great thing to hold on to, Ashley. You know, this is a wonderful, real, crystal clear explanation as to how all of us, regardless of our profession, we really need to have that worked out in us, that clear conviction, if you will, that I'm going to live my life and I'm not going to cater to just someone else's wishes from the standpoint if they find me offensive. Isn't it ironic that in a day where diversity is talked about like this is everyone's right and we should buy into now whatever is being taught to us about things like gender confusion and gender fluidity, and we're all called to believe another person's belief and to respect that, and yet when it comes down to Christianity, that doesn't work that way with most of these same people. They are happily willing to discriminate against those who are believers. That is a sad but true statement, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, and this is how I look at it. You know, I'm not offended if you do A, B, C, or D, but if what I'm doing is offensive and I don't ask what you're doing, that could be considered offensive to stop, but you're going to ask me to stop. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to. No, I'm not going to be mean to you. I'm not going to be nasty. I'm not going to be hostile. But we are, like, if you are a believer, you know, we are supposed to stand up for God and we are supposed to stay firm in our faith. And because of many believers are not standing firm in the faith, it is happening. That's what's happening in our country. And, you know, I don't really ever get political or anything like that. And I'm not siding with anyone, but it's like, when you take God out of everything and you're like, we don't want God in, you know, in our schools and our workplace, and we don't want God in our government, we don't want God in all of these places, you see the ramifications and the consequences of what happens. You know, look what happened with Israel when Israel was like, God, we don't, you know, we don't want any of that. Well, look what happened with them. You know, if you don't stay true to believing in God, and if you don't stay true to the word, which is the Bible, and I'm seeing more and more believers are not like, they don't read the word. You have to stay in the word. If you are not staying in the word, then you really don't know what the truth is, because then what you think is good could be dictated by what society believes is good. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we need to go by. We need to go by what God says, and it's in the Bible, and we need to stay in the word, because if you don't know, then you don't know, and you don't know how to respond to people, and you don't know how you need to be living. It is so vital to stay in the word and to pray and talk to God regularly.
I agree.
So vital as a believer.
I agree. You know, the Bible is very clear that we are to be believers in God, and we also know that in the last days there will be people who are more lovers of pleasure than lovers of God. And so I think we're there. I think we're in that day. It certainly is real all around us. Before we have our next break coming up, we've got enough time that I would want to ask you a follow-up question. Going back to this issue that not only sadly happened in your own parents' lives, divorce is something that, as we talked about, it's prevalent in our culture, in our society. And one of the impacts that we kind of touched on is the impact of what happens to a child. But that is something that, again, I'm thinking of the listeners that are today listening into this conversation. And they have been touched by that, and maybe sadly are concerned because the state of their current marriage might be in jeopardy. And I know that at any given time, a lot of people are having to go through what could possibly end up being in the divorce court. What advice do you have for people? You mentioned already sending some of them to counselors, but is there like something that you've learned as a drop dead, very guaranteed first step that someone should take before they consider pursuing divorce?
Well, definitely pray about it. Praying about it always is the first thing that comes to mind. And I most of my consultations, not every single one of them, but most of them, I will end, pray about it. You know, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, maybe if you don't want to get divorced, but you don't know what to do, pray about it. You know, and a lot of times that, you know, the change starts within ourselves. For so many years, I was like, well, it's them, and I'm going to pray for them to change and them to change. And then, you know, family members are doing that, or bosses are doing this. The reality of it is that's not what you should be asking for. We need to ask God to change ourselves. And when we ask God to change ourselves and work on us, and when we start working on us, that will then have an effect on everyone who is around us, mm-hmm. including your spouse. So if we're just like, God, change him or change her or whatever, but we're not working on just changing us, then how can we expect our significant other to change themselves? We have to ask God to help us work, or have him help work on us and on our insides and how we view our spouse. And we need to love our spouse more. And when you start making small changes, and it will have a significant, significant impact, you know, just listening to your other spouse, you know, just telling them, I love you, I'm proud of you, you know, being more submissive to them. And I don't mean submissive in the way like you do whatever I say. And I especially do not advocate for that. If you were in a very abusive marriage, I do not advocate for that at all, being submissive. But if you're in a godly marriage that you consider to be healthy, being submissive is part of that. And it's not just women. It also applies to men as well. So, you know, so those are some of the things that I think of that absolutely come to mind. Definitely prayer, though. Prayer is so, so important. And especially with your spouse who want to be equally yoked, if you're not, because I have clients that the other spouse isn't a believer. So, you know, you got to pray for them, you know, and mm-hmm. ask God to work in their heart and change them. And sometimes it might take years and years, but just stay at it, you know, and keep working on yourself as well, and it will have significant impact and effects on your marriage.
What impact are you seeing right now in our culture with the people you work with this whole issue of, let's say, parental rights? That's been a big, discussion. In fact, there have even been laws that have been passed in the last couple of years granting and strengthening the role of parents and parental rights. What are you seeing in that?
So what I've come to see, I see more and more of one parent wanting majority or sole custody of their child or children. Now, I can't speak about other states or other countries, but in Florida, both parents are legally entitled to have their child or children equal or like 50-50% of the time. Both parents are legally entitled to that. If you or someone you know wants either sole custody or majority is over 50%, that person who wants that have to prove why you should have that. And the reasons, like a legal reason, is not, well, because the other person's just not around. That's not going to fly, because that person has the legal right to be with their children 50% of the time. So it's just, you got to be very careful. And how I am with clients is, I'm here to help you and I'm here to work with you, but I'm also here to tell you what legally can also happen. And if my clients are being very unreasonable with I want sole custody, I'm going to tell them very likely you're going to lose, because sole custody is truly only for an instance like they're really, really physically abusive to the child, mm-hmm. not to the parent, because a lot of times parents get confused and they're like, well, they're horrible to me and they're abusive to me and they do this. It is not you, the parent. It is the child. It is the child's best interest that the judge is going to take into consideration. And there are, I believe it's 21 factors that the judge is going to take into consideration regarding your time sharing and your parenting plan. So it's about what's best for the child. So
let's pick that back
custody,
up. Let's pick that sure, back up ahead. Right after the break here. We've got a
sure.
break. And my guest today is Ashley Balajan. I'll be back with Ashley in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. A fun chat today with Ashley Balajan. Ashley has her own law firm. That is her name, Ashley Balajan Law Firm, faith-based and at that. And it's so delightful to talk to a professional in this legal business that is not only fair and one that is considerate, but one that is a solid believer and has been willing to go out on that proverbial limb, if you will, of what some people would say, nah, you shouldn't put your faith that far out front. I really appreciate the fact that she does. And this is not to say that she only deals with believers. She doesn't. But everyone knows the type of person that they're getting with, what her faith level in God would be when they hire Ashley. And, you know, this is really important, especially on the issue fronts that we're talking about, like family law, for example. We were talking at the end of the last segment, Ashley, about the whole issue of parental rights. And this whole issue right there is now going to be challenged. A lot of people believe in 2022 in ways that would have up until now been unthinkable. And that would be the role of parents' rights in a day where basically this whole gender issue is coming up to full speed right on the edge of the oven, so to speak. It's front burner stuff. What are you seeing happening in this next year with that issue?
Well, I hope that things will start getting better and parents will work more together and realize that it's really about their child and children, and it's not about what you want. It's not about trying to punish the other parent. Please don't do that. I can't tell you. That is something I see over and over and over again, is when one parent is trying to punish the other parent. One, that does hurt the other parent, especially if they really do love their children, but it hurts your kids. I do see a lot, not usually with my clients, because I will call my clients out on that and I will straighten them out with that, because I will not represent people who do malicious or very hurtful things to the other side. I will not do that. That's very wrong. So I haven't had that happen with any of my clients or anything, but I do see it from the other side. And it's really sad. I know right before the break, we were talking about sole custody. So if I was going to pick up on that real fast and just say, sole custody is very difficult to get. I see people will post it on social media like it's very easy to get. It is not easy to get. It is difficult, and you have to prove your case to the judge, and you need to really have some serious evidence to back up why you need sole custody. Mm-hmm. Another option is majority custody. If you're not doing like 50-50, it would be a majority. So that might mean maybe one parent has 60%, the other parent has 40. Sometimes that will happen, usually when the other parent works a lot or the other parent has like a job where maybe they travel a lot. And that's okay. And that just happens naturally. But just so people know, legally, both parents are legally entitled to have their children or child 50-50. There is another option you can ask for, which is called limited or supervised visitation. That also comes into play when the other parent is very unsafe. They could be either like a sexual offender. Going to jail just for going to jail because like you robbed a bank doesn't mean you get supervised visitation. It needs to be like serious stuff, like maybe they are a possible pedophile, or maybe they're doing drugs in front of the child, or they're being abusive. So you have to make sure that whatever you were alleging against the other parent, you really have evidence, because otherwise you're going to lose if you're just throwing it out there, but you don't have any evidence to back it up. So I always tell people, please think very carefully about what you want, because you want to make sure you have real solid reasons why you're asking for it, and you're not doing it to just do it.
Do you feel like the judicial climate of our country, especially in Florida right now, let's just deal with Florida on this question. Do you feel like here in the state, the attitude of judges would be where it needs to be, or would you like to see change in that?
From what I've personally seen in Central Florida, I do believe a lot of the judges really, truly do care. That's from what I've seen in Central Florida. I personally believe a lot of the judges that I've been through, they are truly looking out for the kids. Now, not every judge is like that, because, you know, there's some bad apples and everywhere, and that's every profession across the board. But what I have seen is that the judges, they really do care about the kids. They want to make sure you have the best outcome for this child, because a judge is supposed to listen to both sides objectively. That's what they're supposed to do. And then make their legal decision based on the facts presented from both sides. For the most part, I think that the judges that I have been in front of have been fair. It is a difficult job, because especially in family law, because, you know, who's telling the truth? Because some, you know, people lie in court, you know. It's sad. You should never lie. It's perjury, but people do. They lie. And what if the judge, you know, believed that lie? And if you can't prove that they're lying, you know, I mean, it could really be detrimental and everything. So, I mean, I think a lot of them do care. I think a lot of them are trying the best they can with the facts that they have. It is a difficult job to be a judge. It is a difficult job indeed. So mm-hmm. I do not envy them at all. No. Especially with an injunction judges that do domestic violence division. That's also another really difficult area as well.
It certainly is. And that was actually my next question to you, because I know that part of what you do in family law is represent those people in a time or in a situation where there is domestic violence going on. And this is something that is really open to a lot of discussion as to when something has gone from being a heated argument. Obviously, if there are fists being thrown, then that's a no-brainer. But you brought up something earlier that was really important to understand, and that is the role that psychological domestic violence, where it's not physical, but it is verbal, that really has a serious impact on children as well. And I'm sure you found that out in your practice.
Yes, absolutely. And with domestic violence, the advice that I always tell people, because not everyone can afford an attorney when they either, you know, go through family law or an injunction. So one thing I would like to tell people, if anyone, you know, listening, needs to get an injunction against another person, is You always want to start with the most recent dates and work your way backwards. An injunction is for the purpose to protect you because you're in fear of imminent harm that's going to come to you if this injunction doesn't get granted. So I will have people that reach out to me and they're like, well, you know, they were a horrible person 10 years ago, 5 years ago, a couple of years ago, I was really scared. And I'm like, okay, well, what have they done recently? Well, you know, nothing. You're not going to get it granted. You can't bring up stuff from like 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and then expecting an injunction because the harm or the imminent harm or fear is no longer attached. And then a judge is not going to grant you that. Don't ever lie. I have seen people lie. Don't do it, because I've seen people try to do it to hurt the other side. Don't do that, because if a judge finds out, you are going to get some serious consequences if you try to do something against the other side just to hurt them. Don't ever make false allegations. It is very serious because it can truly destroy someone's life. So when you do it, be very, very careful. But if you need it, absolutely do it. There's legal aids all throughout Central Florida that can help you, and they will help you. Like, they can go through it with you, help fill it out. If you qualify, some of them will represent you for free. So you can also get a private attorney, or you can fill it out on your own. I always tell people, be very specific with your events. You don't need to write like a page long for each event, but start from the most recent.
Mm-hmm.
And an injunction in Florida, they passed it a couple of years ago. It can also cover any pets that you have, because what they were finding out, which is very common sense, but what they were finding out was a lot of survivors, domestic violence survivors, were not leaving their abuser because they couldn't take their pet with them. So some shelters, such as Harbor House, they'll let you take your pet. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That just blows my mind. So you're saying that some people stay in a domestic relationship over a pet?
Oh, absolutely. Because they'll use the pet as a weapon and either will hurt the pet as well, or they will kill the pet, or they'll kill the pet after you leave. So it is incredibly serious. Abusers usually will abuse the pet as well, in addition to the children. So an injunction can cover your child or children, and it can also cover your pet. You have to check off that box and write it down. I want this to cover my pet in addition to my children, okay? So very, very serious. If you have any evidence, you want everything dated on it, okay? So text messages need to have a date on it. Can't say like November 11th. You need to make sure it says like November 11th, 2021. You need to have dates on all of these text messages to prove when this happened. If you have videos, make sure there's a date. If you have photos, you need to have dates on these photos.
Mm-hmm.
If you have witnesses, that's fine. If you don't want to say the witness's name when you're initially filling it out, because the abuser will read that, you can just say, I have a witness, but I don't want to disclose their name at this time. You can keep your address confidential, and you can keep your workplace as well as your phone number confidential as well.
Wow. So, these are things that I just had never heard of. I did not realize that the role of a pet had such a prominent place in this whole discussion, like what you've done. But boy, that's something. Real quick, before we go, there's the question of COVID. COVID has wormed its way into our lives, seemingly in an ever-expanding fashion. How has it impacted your firm or the whole legal climate as well of family law?
So in law in general right now, COVID has affected it by having virtual hearings. So initially it was a little fuzzy in the beginning, but now we're used to it. So that actually hasn't been too big of a problem. I've only seen it really become a problem in court if there's like a lot of exhibits or evidence that you need to present. That's when I see it can be a problem, or people are having a hard time trying to log in. It's not usually the attorneys, it's usually the clients, or maybe they're not computer savvy and they're having a difficult time, and then people get locked in the waiting room. Those are pretty much the only bad things that I've seen happen from COVID in the legal profession.
Mm-hmm.
In my firm is a virtual law firm. So what that means is I don't have a physical office. I work completely remotely. So all my clients will just either text or will email, or we'll talk on the phone. I will send you everything you need via email, and we'll sign things electronically. And I have not had any problems with that at all since I've opened my firm a little under 2 years ago. Everything's been completely virtual. So for me, I wasn't really affected. I've embraced it. And I've used it to my advantage. So, and I will continue to stay virtual for the foreseeable future. I might get a brick and mortar place, but right now, virtual has been completely working for me.
That's
in
great.
In other areas of family law, I've seen from a lot of my colleagues, some of them go to the office a couple times a week, or they might just go one day a week. Some have completely gone back in person, but then because of the variant coming, some have like gone back again. So everyone's different. It truly, truly depends.
Yeah.
So it depends on what they're comfortable with. It also depends on what kind of area of law you practice. But I haven't had any problems at all. When I do consultations, it's on the phone. When we have our hearings, it's all virtual. When I need to prep my clients, we just do it virtually. So I have not had any problems.
Ashley, this has been so great, so helpful to hear a professional outlook like what you've given us today. Give us your website real quick. We've got about a minute left. Give us your website,
sure.
How people can get in touch with you.
Sure, absolutely. It's BalagianLawFirm.com. So BalagianLawGeon as in Nancy, LawFirm.com. And if anyone has any questions about anything, or if they ever want to talk about God, or if you ever want even just the counselor's names, like, and you have no intention of retaining me, that's fine. I don't mind, because I'm not here to take your money. I'm here to help you. So if you even want just counselor's names, just let me know and I will happily send them over to you.
And you know, that is such a delightful thing to hear, that people are really, really concerned about helping somebody else more than they are making a profit. And that's something that's very clear about you. I so have enjoyed this, and you've been so informative to our listeners. Thank you, Ashley. We look forward to having you back on.
Thank you so much. It's truly been a privilege and an honor. So thank you so much.
God bless you. And friends, thank you as well for being with us on another day here. Afternoons with Mike on The Shepherd. We'll catch you next time.